Today's episode was People, Not Workers, Migrants and the Borders of Viral Capitalism. I'm Athena Khalid. Thanks to James Ward and Gal Mahadevan for production, and to Sasha Kay for the theme. Thanks as well to Abdul, Mustafa, Evelyn, Hamid for taking the time to talk to us. Tune in on Friday, July 31st at 5 p.m. for our next episode on homelessness and harm reduction.
Good evening. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between.
You're listening to a look back edition of Upstage on June 24th, 2021. Coming up, some favorite interviews from the past few months. Bonne Saint-Jean. In November of last year, 2020, Black Theatre Workshop unveiled plans for its 50th anniversary season. Despite the pandemic, they promised a very busy upcoming season with virtual shows, readings, the Vision Awards, mentoring and showcasing up-and-coming artists, as well as a chance to work with the NAC, meaning a national platform for the artistry at Black Theatre Workshop. And it, of course, is coming at a time of even greater awareness and activism about Black life in culture. Black Theatre Workshop is the longest-running Black theatre company in Canada. Artistic director Quincy Armourer spoke to me last November about the company's origins and its big plans for the upcoming season. Good evening, Quincy. Welcome back to Upstage. Thank you so much for taking the time.
It's my pleasure, Sarah. Nice to be here.
And a big congratulations on the 50th anniversary, which...
Thank you.
We talked about it a little bit last time you were on to speak about George, but now your Furl calendar is out. You've launched your season. What was important? Not every head of a theater company gets to plan a 50th season, right? So when you were talking with your team about what needed to be part of, you know, celebrating 50 years, what were you looking to accomplish?
It's a great question. I think we were looking to do a couple of things. I mean, obviously, to be celebrating such a milestone, 50th anniversary, is a big thing, and it makes you become very reflective and to think about, you know, where the company is and where you want to go. And that's kind of where things landed for me. I wanted to make sure that the season was going to be a reflection of both of those things, that we were able to honor our legacy and history by looking back. But at the same time, I think it's also really important to make sure that we're like, okay, we've gotten to this point, we've made it to 50 years, where is the company going to be going moving forward? And so that I wanted to make sure we didn't just rest on the past and become too reflective without actually making a stance or a clear vision for where the company is going to be going into the future. So I wanted to make sure that we covered a little bit of both of those things. And I hope that we'll be able to actually do that. You know, there's going to be some celebratory things, talking to some of the people that have been a part of the company back in the 90s, 80s, 70s, but also to make sure that we're looking for where the company is heading as well.
I like that. Looking back, but also looking forward. It's important. Mm-hmm. Would you mind telling us, like, looking a bit back and telling us about the origins of the company?
Sure. I mean, it's 50 years now. So back in Black Theatre Workshop, as we know it, is 50 years, but it's sort of had its beginnings even a little bit before that. It was founded really as a part of a drama club or drama committee within the Trinidad and Tobago Association of Montreal. So the origins of the company are very much rooted in Caribbean culture and West Indian culture, Trinidad and Tobago specifically. And then over the course of many years, it's just grown and expanded to encompass, you know, the full Black diaspora, not just the Caribbean culture, but, you know, Black Caribbean and North American and European and African culture as well. So we really have run the gamut to just be, you know, I think it was, you know, the back in the days, people like Clarence Bain, who's still on our board of directors, believe it or not,
who's wow.
one of the founders. Yeah, it's incredible. I'm so impressed with this gentleman and honored to know him. But, you know, they really wanted to make sure that the stories of the culture of West Indian Black folk in Montreal were being present on stage, because they just weren't. And so that really is the nucleus for Black Theatre Workshop. Over the course of the years, as I mentioned, you know, we've encompassed a lot more than that. But to me, that speaks to the longevity of the company and to the passion and dedication of those who were a part of the organization beforehand. I think it's really important to acknowledge that a company doesn't exist for 50 years if it's not for many, many, many dedicated and passionate individuals who give so much to make sure that it does have that longevity. So I'm honored to stand on the shoulders of so many artists and individuals who came beforehand, who played a role in making BTW what it is. And yeah, I'm excited right now to see where the company's going to go. We have some exciting things in store, you know, lots to celebrate and lots to be proud of. So it's a really exciting time for us at Black Theatre Workshop right now.
It most definitely is. Speaking with Artistic Director Quincy Armorer at Black Theatre Workshop 50th season, the calendar is out now. And you have a lot of things coming up, first of which is something coming up in December, part of your Discovery series. Can you tell me about Sanctuary?
Yeah, Sanctuary is our play reading series, our Discovery series, and it's a new play that's written by our newly appointed artistic associate, Lydie Dubuisson, who I'm very excited to have on our team. And this is a new play. We did a stage reading of her other play, Quiet, a couple of years ago, I think it was. And so this is another piece of hers that she's been working on for quite some time. And I'm really excited to bring it to the stage. Lydie is a multidisciplinary artist. You know, she's an alumnus of our artist mentorship program. And she's an emerging director as well. So it's really nice to be able to help foster her, not only in terms of direction, but as a writer. So this is a really, really lovely play. And it centers around one character who's just sort of, you know, going through a little bit of an inner struggle and taking sanctuary in her church, sort of find her path and find her faith, which I think is a really lovely message, particularly with everything that's going on right now in the world. So we're really excited to share this piece. It's going to be a virtual reading on Friday, December the 11th. That's scheduled right now for 2:00 in the afternoon. So we're hoping that people will join us on our Facebook page, because that's where we're going to be doing a live stream.
What kind of response are you getting from the members of the BTW community and the larger Black community in Montreal as you were kind of, you know, hitting this amazing anniversary, 50 years? Are people coming forward with memories? Are you hearing, like, thoughts from people?
They are. I mean, it's a little bit tricky because, you know, obviously with COVID and the pandemic, we've lost a little bit of that connection with our public a little bit. We're not as active as we have been.
Because normally you'd be doing events, and that would be a fantastic opportunity. Everybody knows who Quincy Armorer is, and that would be a good opportunity where people would probably just be coming up to you and kind of saying, hey, like just great job or whatnot, or sending feedback right in person. But that's not happening.
It's not happening in that way, but we have gotten some wonderful messages from people who have reached out to us either, you know, through social media or via email to let us know that they're thinking of us and that they're really proud and happy to see that we've made it to where we are. And to me, that's one of the things about Black Theatre Workshop. It really did have its roots as a community organization, and that facet of the company is still around. People feel a sense of ownership and connection to Black Theatre Workshop, and I'm really proud of that. So we've gotten some lovely messages from some people who are celebrating with us from afar, unfortunately. But to me, that speaks to the power of this organization. There's something about Black Theater Workshop that brings communities together. You know, when we have our shows, particularly those Sunday matinees that we would have, those post-church going Sunday matinees where people would come together and they would celebrate together at a Black Theater Workshop show. Like, that's a part of the heart of this company. It's what makes me so proud to be a part of it. So that's still happening, perhaps not as much as it would be if it weren't for a global pandemic that we're all facing. But I'm really encouraged by the fact that our community is still making an effort to reach out to us and to let us know how important we are to them. That means a lot.
I know we were just talking about the calendar there. We were discussing the first event, which is coming up December 11th. And if it's okay with you to go back to the calendar, because there is one thing happening in a couple months from now that really intrigued me. You're going to be taking part in Black and Blue Matters, again, a series with the National Arts Center, which is really cool. I'm not sure how it works. So it's a Black Theater Workshop production, but it's presented by the NAC. And it's going, I think you're planning to do this virtually. Can you tell me about this particular presentation?
Yeah, for sure. This is a new initiative by the National Arts Center called Grand Act of Theater. And it's something that they started to put some focus on live performance during the pandemic. And they invited 11 performing arts organizations from across the country to participate. So we're really, really honored to be one of 11 companies that are taking part in this. And the piece that we chose to do was an excerpt of the upcoming production of Black and Blue Matters by Amari Newton, that's directed by Diane Roberts. It was supposed to originally be done on Thanksgiving weekend, but then once Montreal became a COVID red zone, we were forced to cancel. So it was one of those things where we could do theater the way that we wanted to, but we had this opportunity to do this live, socially distanced, outdoor performance, but then we couldn't do that either. All this to say that it's been postponed. We're going to be doing it in the spring, either in April or in May of 2021. And what it is a rap battle. This piece was a follow-up piece to Sal Capone, The Lamentable Tragedy Of by Omari Newton that we produced back in 2013. This is the follow-up piece to that. And this excerpt is a rap battle between two of the characters, Samir Frederick, who is a Black youth who was shot by a police officer, and David Harrison, the white police officer who shot him. So it very much speaks to the violence that the Black community is facing at the hands of law enforcement, to the Black Lives Matter movements. It's a very current, unfortunately, in many ways, a very current piece in that regard. So I'm really excited that it's still going to be able to have some form of presentation in spite of the fact that it was canceled when we were supposed to do it. And then the full production of Black and Blue Matters was supposed to be in this 50th season, but we've had to postpone it. So we're looking to present the full production in season 51 in the 2021-22 season.
Fantastic. So people who saw the story of Sal Capone way back when, it seems so much more recent than then, but 2013, wow. Yeah. If you had seen that, this is kind of a continuing thread. It's also just so interesting to me because the topic of violence against people of color by the police has become, as you said, so at the forefront right now, but you've been telling these stories for years. is there a feeling within your community that it's like, well, everyone's kind of coming around to seeing this issue for what it is, but we've been talking about it for so long and living through it?
Yeah, I mean, it's very much that, you know. I mean, Black Lives Matter is definitely a thing that's being talked about right now, and as, you know, it rightfully should. But the way that I've been talking about this is that, you know, that's perhaps what it's called right now, and the movement now has a branding. But to organizations like Black Theater Workshop and to the many Black communities, we've been fighting for and arguing for Black Lives Matter for a very, very long time now. We just didn't used to call it that. But it now has a name, it now has a title, there's now a specific movement associated with it. So in many ways, we're still doing the same work that we have been doing for a very, very long time. It just now has a name and a title that we can give to it. But all this to say that it's really important to us to make sure that the stories that we tell at Black Theatre Workshop speak to what is important to our communities in the here and now. And in many ways, that has changed and evolved over 50 years. And in many other ways, it's exactly the same, which is a really interesting thing to reflect upon. You know, as far as we have come as a society, as a people, as a species, we still have so much further to go. That's something that never ceases to impress or surprise me as time goes on. But it's really important, I think, for us to take a moment and reflect upon these things to see that, yes, Black Lives do matter and that these stories are important. And we're going to keep doing what we're doing. But what's really great is that I think there's a little bit more attention and focus on the importance of the communities and the importance of the stories that companies like Black Lives Workshop are telling. And that's a really good thing. You know, that's the light at the end of the tunnel, or, you know, to use maybe a bad cliche, of the icing on the cake, but I think there's something to be said for the fact that there's now appropriate amount of focus and attention being put on the Black Lives Matter movement, and I want to make sure that Black Theatre Workshop and our communities take advantage of the fact that this is important right now, and people are taking notice.
It's so fitting that you touched on this, because I wanted to ask about how the stories and the themes have changed over time and how they haven't changed. So in the first season of Black Theatre Workshop, let's say, or the second, third season, were these themes was that what was au courant at the time and important to audiences then as well?
Perhaps in a little bit different ways, right? Because the roots of Black Theatre Workshop were very much in the West Indian community as a part of the Trinidad and Tobago Association of Montreal. So it had a very specific and to a degree national focus, I guess, is one way of putting it. And that's evolved and expanded over the years to be a little bit more wider and encompassing more of the diaspora. But at the same time, at its heart, at its root, those stories are still the same. Back then, people like Clarence Bain and his contemporaries were wanting to make sure that the things that were important to Black communities, and in his case, it was, you know, Black communities mm-hmm. from the Caribbean in particular, but the need to make sure that our stories, our histories, the things that were important to us were communicated and represented on stages in Montreal. In that regard, things haven't changed. That still needs to be given focus and priority. So that's, for me, where the things haven't, I don't want to say that they haven't changed, but the importance is still there. That's something that hasn't diminished, the importance of making sure that our communities, our lives, our stories, our people, our artists are represented in the work that we do, represented in Montreal and Canada's arts community. That's still the same, for sure.
Quincy, I wanted to ask you a personal question, which is about how you first came to BTW, but also if there was any show in particular that has stood out as like maybe something that you did that was a highlight for you, or something you saw as an audience member that really stood out from the past couple of years?
Oh, wow. What a lovely, lovely question, Sarah. I think I'm a Montrealer. I'm born and raised here, and I'm a theater guy, and I'm Black. So BTW has always been... but all this to say that BTW has always been a part of my ambition. You know, I've known about the company since I was a teenager, and I've always wanted to be a part of it. And in terms of productions that have, you know, that I've seen or that have been significant to me, I mean, I'll always go back to as a performer. 5 years ago, we did The Adventures of a Black Girl in Search of God by Janet Sears. This was a National Arts Center and Centaur Theater co-production in association with Black Theater Workshop, and I had the privilege of being in the cast of this show. And it was unlike any production I had ever been a part of, ever. in my life until then. I still talk about the fact that as a performer, as a theater artist, there was Quincy Armour before August 25th, 2015, which was the first day of rehearsals for Adventures, and then there's Quincy Armour after. Because that production changed. It changed me. It changed who I am as a person. It changed who I am as an actor, as a theater professional. It was so significant because we were telling such an important story. It's the first time I had been involved in a production that had so many Black artists involved together on stage. And Janet Sears, in the way that she brought art and our culture into the storytelling, was just unlike anything I had ever been seen or been a part of before. So in terms of productions that have been very significant in my life, that's probably the one, The Adventures of a Black Girl in Search of God by Janet Sears, definitely.
So beautifully said, Quincy. And I just wanted to recall that you were something like 20 people at least on stage, right?
22 in that cast. Yeah, it was fantastic. Like a chorus of 14 people.
Yeah.
Oh, we just, and it was just a remarkable experience. Like we got on like a house on fire. Mm-hmm. Everybody understood the significance of what was happening in that production, you know, and it wasn't an all Black cast. It was very diverse, mostly Black, but, you know, a lot of artists who were non-Black as well, but everybody understood the importance and the significance of what was happening in that production, in that room, in those rehearsals, and in that process. It was very, very remarkable.
And I remember you being front and center, I believe. You played the partner of the main character. Am I recalling that correctly?
Yeah, that's right. Lucinda Davis played Rainey, and I played Pastor Michael. I played her ex-husband in the show. Yeah.
That play has stuck with me mostly. I recall the, the parents, the elderly people who were in their off hours committing some forms of...
In the show, they were called the Lots of Soap Gang.
Yeah. Committing acts of vigilantism, that their storyline was what always stuck with me from there. It was such a delightfully strange and subversive plot line coming through, but for older actors as well. And but the sheer size of all those people on stage was really truly breathtaking. And it's very interesting to hear it from your perspective and how that's shaped you as an artist. As an artist, do you feel like it changed you? You gave a reason, but is it because it changed maybe or solidified what kind of stories you wanted to tell?
In part, it definitely. You know, opened my eyes into the kind of stories that I want to tell as a performer, and the stories that are important to me. You know, I've been a performer and I've had a very successful career, and that's great, but I haven't always been afforded the opportunity to play characters that have been written for a Black performer. And that's something that I cherish and welcome. It's not just playing a Black role, but in this story with these people and the importance of community and culture and ancestry and family, all of those things were a part of Adventures. And then, you know, and you talk about the Lots of Soap Gang, and as younger actors compared to them, to be in the process with actors like Walter Borden and Lily Franks and Jackie Bridgerton and Barbara Baines Hopkins and Rudy Webb, like it just brought everything all together in so many ways, because it was culture, it was also ancestral, it was generational. It really covered everything, and I can go on and on and on forever about what that show meant to me. It just was the most significant professional experience I have ever had.
So well put. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me about that personal experience for you, but also what you're looking forward to this year and what you have planned for the 50th anniversary for Black Theater Workshop. There's so much to look forward to.
Yeah, there is. Thank you for having me on and to be able to talk about it. I'm excited for our public to share with us in this celebration, and it's going to be different. You know, I can't wait until we can have our audiences back in the room with us. But in the meantime, I hope that they're going to join us on social media, on all of our virtual platforms. And I look forward to just being able to celebrate with the audiences that have been so loyal to us for 50 years.
Thank you so much, Quincy.
My pleasure. Thank you, Sarah.
That was Quincy Armorer, Artistic Director at Black Theatre Workshop. You can visit them at blacktheatreworkshop.ca. They're hoping to raise $50,000 for their 50th year if you want to donate or help out in some way. Quincy took time to speak with me last November. You are currently listening to a retro edition of Upstage, looking back on some of the conversations I've had over the past year. I'm your host, Sarah Day. Next up, an interview with the actress and writer Amelia Sargeson from earlier this year. Amelia's developing work was presented in a showcase for emerging writers at the Centaur this past January. I thought she really encapsulated what a challenge this year has been for artists. Amelia, in particular, with not a lot of acting work around, had kind of pivoted to writing and was leaning heavily on mentors to develop this piece. So here is my conversation with Amelia Sargeson from January 2021.
Good evening, Amelia. Welcome to Upstage. How have you been these past 10 months or so?
Hey, Sarah. Well, you certainly start with a loaded question.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, my journey over the past 10 months bankrupts language. We've all been riding these really huge ups and downs, but I mean, all in all, I think I can say that I'm fortunate insofar as my loved ones have mostly been in good health, and I think that's the biggest priority for everyone these days. So, yeah.
You're right. It is a bit of a loaded question, and it's funny, since March, that is honestly how I've started just about all of these interviews. And recently, that we do here on Upstage, and I recently thought to myself, maybe I should stop asking that. But once I'm talking to someone, it's just the first thing off the top of my mind, just because we're all going through such crazy changes. I mean, even people who, you know, might have still have a job to go to or like a hobby to do have still experienced some uncertainty, right? So it's hard to answer the question. It's normal. It's kind of hard in ordinary times as well. But we last saw you. Go ahead.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm all for asking big questions and real questions, and you know, you're right to point out that, of course, it's at the forefront of your mind. You know, how have you been coping?
Amelia, you, I guess this is a privilege of sorts. You're one of the last performers we saw on stage before things kind of halted, right? With Paradise Lost in the months before the pandemic started. That was such a fun production. You were playing Eve. What was it like to come off of that? And it was huge, right? Like, how many people were on stage? What was it like to come off of doing a big work like that at the Centaur?
My whole journey with that play was and has been, and I think will forever be, one of the most profound and exhilarating creative experiences of my life. And what was really magical for me about the Centaur production was, you know, not only that I got to reprise what I had done at Stratford and, you know, go deeper, especially in my relationship with Adam, who was immortalized by my beloved friend Qasim Khan, but that I got to bring it home and share it with a home audience and share it with some local artists who were stepping into the roles of some of the older cast. So that was just, the play itself just is so huge, right? Like, we go all across the cosmos, and the journey internally mirrored that for me.
So coming off working on a big production like Paradise Lost, what's your reality been like since, I guess not since March, but these past few months? Like, have projects been put on hold? Have you been doing other things at the same time? I know everyone has got some, have all been doing different projects to keep busy and to keep working.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can say that it's been significantly more quiet. But I don't know, I was sort of thinking about how nature abhors a vacuum, and apparently so does Amelia. So I've found all kinds of other ways to fill the emptiness that opened when basically a year's worth of contracts evaporated. And what's been really joyful and what I'm so grateful for is that I've actually just been able to be a little bit more intentional and conscious about how I fill said vacuum, because I'm not just sort of blindly on the hamster wheel of chasing the next acting gig. So I've been able to do a lot more of my own writing, and I've always loved writing. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. I've always been drawn to writing. I would say that I've always had a pretty fraught relationship with writing. But for me, at this moment, something sort of aligned, and it became the only way that I could sort of grapple with the chaos was through the written word. So I started a little creative accountability group this summer with local playwright Alex Haber, and we would just meet every week on Zoom. And what was, you know, the one thing that Zoom has opened up is the ability to work with friends and colleagues across the country. So that was really exciting. We even had a friend of mine joining us from Detroit. So, wow. You know, we started there, each of us sort of watering these little seedlings of ideas, and it's just been kind of wild to see how my own piece has grown and how some of the other pieces from that creative accountability group have also grown. So I've been doing, you know, that kind of thing, like more self-started projects.
Which is, it's just such a pivot, right, from being, as you were saying, you know, talking about contracts and being assigned up for different things, where you're counting on someone else to kind of push your creative process forward, because it's all teamwork, right? And in writing, it's so individual. How did you come to be in an accountability group? This is really interesting.
Well, I suppose that one of my creative role models and mentors was the springboard for the idea. Her name is Haley McGee, and she was actually in fourth year at Ryerson Theatre School, and I was in first year, so she's someone to whom I've always looked up. And she's now based in London, England, where she's a writer-performer. So she mostly does her own work and performs her own work. So she started right at the beginning of all of this, a 14-day creative quarantine challenge.
Wow.
Which I did with great relish and learned after the fact that Alex Haber had also been doing it simultaneously to me. So then we thought, well, you know, that was just so great to be able to check in with, you know, this cohort of international artists. We should do something like that for ourselves to, you know, advance these projects, to push them to the next level. So it was just something that we talked about on a socially distant walk one afternoon, and then it came to pass. But, and we didn't want to give it too much structure, because I think everyone has just been metabolizing so much over the past little while that you don't want to do something that's burdensome or that's going to feel like extra work, but rather something that's just going to buoy people up and ignite the creativity. So we just decided that every week we'd sort of pass the baton to a different person in the group to come up with some creative tips and insights. And it was such a pleasure for me to see what, you know, ideas were percolating in my friends and colleagues. And I amassed it all into this big Word document at the end, so that we sort of have that as this inspo Bible if you're ever just sitting there ready to gouge your eyes out in front of the computer and not having any ideas. So, you know, it's just in the extra space space, I feel like there has been some new birds.
I'm speaking with Amelia Sargeson, who is going to be part of Catalyst at Centaur coming up very shortly. And we're just talking about the writing process and how to keep track of it. I just was really curious about the accountability thing, because I know how difficult it can be, like from a personal perspective as well, to keep on yourself, to keep going, especially in this weird time where it seems like what's going on in the news and the wider world is so strange. Either you want to look away or you can't stop looking away. So having this kind of support must be just totally invaluable. And you're probably getting a ton of terrific feedback as well on works in progress. So pivoting, let's talk about the work you're going to be talking about with Rose as part of Catalyst. It's called For Shame. Is this something you've been working on for the last, like for something you've been thinking about for a long time, or is it a more recent development?
Well, I would say that the prompt for this actually came this summer when Ida Holmes, the artistic director of Centaur, put out a call for this particle project of outdoor performances. And she was asking for pieces on the theme of unpacking the self, unpacking the moment, you know, really any iteration that your imagination could drum up of unpacking. And something about it just set something off inside of me. And so I would say a fit of writing produced this little baby awkward draft that I submitted to the Portico project, and then and it was unsuccessful. I did not get into the Portico Festival. But what Ida said was, well, we want to launch this thing in January, and, you know, we think that your material might be better suited to an indoor context, i.e. not
outdoors.
Centaur. And of course, she was absolutely right about that, because as the title might suggest, it's actually a very confessional, intimate piece. So I was grateful for her better judgment there, prevailing and sort of shepherding me in the right direction with the tone and quality of this. And then the most attractive part about this offer from her was that Centaur would provide some dramaturgical support. So talk about accountability. Now I have it from, you know, an institution that I have admired from my girlhood. And then when Rose stepped into the picture, you know, I just was so delighted, because I think she has such a delicate and wild imagination. And I knew that she would be a beautiful midwife and steward. And so she is and continues to be. So that just really motivated me to say, okay, it's maybe not as dumb and awkward an idea as I thought, and keep going and keep diving. And it's interesting, you know, to sort of circle back to your actual question, which was, is it new or old? I'm finding that it's both things, really, because while the prompt was relatively new, I'm preoccupied creatively with many of the same themes. And so I've been musing on them and kind of hovering around them for my whole life, I would say, and they're finding expression in this piece and through this character, Sister Katrina.
Tell me about Sister Katrina.
Sister Katrina, she's a Celtic nun, and if that combination of words sounds weird, I promise you there's a reason for it.
Okay.
And she's in a very fraught moment in her life when she is moving back to her hometown of Montreal and wrestling with all of the mistakes she's made, and wondering in a really immediate and visceral way if it's possible for her to forgive herself.
Okay, so something from the past that she's wrestling with. Is the theme of coming back to Montreal, is that pulled from your own life? Because you grew up here and you've been away for some time for work. Is that a parallel?
You bet.
Okay.
You bet, yeah. And it's also like, I feel like the world is sort of in this collective moment of suspension. You know, it's this liminal space where we're looking back and we're reckoning with everything that has preceded us and everything that we've done, and we're waiting to go forward into, I think, what so many people hope and are working actively to build is a better future. And there's something about moving, and especially moving to your hometown, to your place of birth, that reflects that sort of boomerang effect and that suspension effect, and this idea of having to really look at where you are. When you're at the threshold, you're so aware that you're on the threshold. So, yeah, I would say it for sure. It's just plucked from my own life.
So you'll be able to discuss Sister Katrina. You'll be discussing her and the show For Shame as part of Catalyst at Centaur. So is this kind of strange? Because not only is the work going to involve a reading, but then you have to talk about it as well. And I don't know how you feel about having to talk about, you know, talking about acting maybe is one thing, but maybe writing is a bit, it's harder sometimes. Is that something, what are you more nervous about, the reading or the Q&A?
Oh, boy. I mean, I think you're bang on that writing in some ways is an even more vulnerable enterprise. And then to be performing your own writing is this kind of bizarre form of masochism. But, you know, Haley, my mentor, talks about running towards what feels good in the material. And I really tried to keep that in mind. And I'm also just trying to approach this work in progress showcase as a lab, you know, where I'm in there experimenting, and, you know, a vital part of the experiment is the people who may or may not be watching, who may be watching, hopefully. but I think that probably talking about it afterwards, because, you know, sometimes in these moments too, like, even though you're, unfortunately, when you're doing these live streams, you're divorced from that sort of palpable feeling of the audience being there. I still have experience when I've done these, that it is live and that I do get that adrenaline and those nerves. And so then just coming down from that to sort of immediately be able to speak about it and put a sentence together, I think it'll be wild. Like, we'll see, you know, I'm just so grateful for the opportunity. And one of the things that I've always been searching for is more agency creatively and professionally. And when you're pivoting from being an interpretive artist to writing your own work, you get to lean into that. And it's so satisfying.
So one final question for you, Amelia. This is obviously a work in progress. We're going to hear a little bit more about it coming up at Catalyst. And what would be the ideal, not finale, but where would you love to see the play end up? What format? What stage? What's the big dream?
Well, I think the fun of doing a solo show is that it's really portable. So, you know, obviously I would love for it to receive a full production at Centaur one day, but I also would love to take it to the Solo Show Festival in New York City, or, you know, to the Edinburgh Fringe, I'm sure everyone has this, like, hunger to travel, and so part of what keeps me afloat is fantasizing about doing this show on the international circuit, but that's a long way away. I think just see first if it's going to resonate with other people. That's always the big question. You know, as you pointed out, writing is so solitary, and whereas rehearsing a play is this communal event where you sort of immediately can test whether anything you're trying is effective, and you immediately get feedback. You can see it right in your scene partner's eyes if what you're doing is working or not. Whereas, you know, with the long hours writing, I don't know, like, is this going to echo for anyone else? So that's the first tentative little step that
absolutely
I will be taking at the end of the month.
Can't wait to see it, Amelia. And thank you so much for coming on to talk about For Shame and for giving some of your time to Upstage. It's been really fun to check in with you, and I hope we'll be hearing from you again sometime soon.
Thank you so much, Sarah, and for giving a platform to local artists. Really amazing.
That was actress Amelia Sargerson from a conversation we had last January as she was gearing up to present a play she is working on at the Centaur. You're listening to a look back or retro edition of Upstage for today, June 24th, 2021, looking back on some of my favorite conversations from the past year. Next conversation is with Kamana Nibarekure, a theater artist who is the first to take on a new role at the Siegel Center as a BIPOC artist advocate and artistic advisor. She was speaking to me about a light show that the Siegel Center had collaborated with Black Theater Workshop, Liberation's Radiance, conceived by lighting designer Tim Rodriguez. It was presented in front of the Siegel. Kamana joined me last February to talk about some of her work, to talk about Liberation's Radiance, as well as Siegel Center's outreach to BIPOC people in the theater community. Here is our conversation. Welcome back to Upstage, Kamana. How are you doing?
I am doing great. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, so great to have you joining me. And this, we have so much to talk about because there's a fantastic project, fantastic conversations, as well as your role with the Siegel Center. Why don't we, that we'll touch on, why don't we start with the presentation itself. Tim Rodriguez, a very talented lighting designer based in Montreal, nominated for Metas, winning Metas. He does really cool work. It's called Liberation's Radiance. Can you tell me a bit about the development process?
Once I was appointed as the working at the Siegel as their BIPOC advocate, Liberation's Radiance is my first kind of project. So Lisa came up with the idea to have a lighting installation and in collaboration with Black Theater Workshop for Black History Month. And so they commissioned Tim, and, you know, Tim being the amazing artist that he is, he came up with the whole statement. He had this whole thing that he is transmitting through the piece. And we just started talking it through. You know, he just wanted somebody to kind of bounce his ideas on. And then I was like, well, you know what'd be great? It would be to bring forth more voices to the installation. And that's kind of how I came to be. I just kind of joined Tim's endeavor, and it became what it is now.
It feels so organic. And do you feel like that kind of defines how, you know, the artistic process is happening at the Siegel?
Yes. I really, really like this position because it's in development, but I'm working closely with Lisa Rubin, who's the artistic and executive director, of course, and John, who's the general manager, and just the team. Like, I'm on the team meetings, and it's just all these conversations that I can be a part of where I'm learning, but I'm also bringing my perspective. So it's really shaping up to be what I expected and more.
That's awesome to hear. Could you maybe just describe us what people might see passing by the Siegel on Côte Saint-Catherine between those 2 hours?
Yes. So basically, it's a light installation. So it's telling a story through light. It's, of course, it's programmed, so you can see different flashes, how it progresses, how it goes from the green to the blue. It's a very evocative piece.
Yes.
And I think that you can see, like, I love it because you can see it without having read the artistic statement. And you'll mm-hmm. be like, oh, wow. Mm-hmm. And then you read the statement and you're like, oh, wow. And if you start with the statement and watch the piece after, it gives you a different experience, you know? So there's so much to it.
I'm speaking with Kamana Nibarikure, who is working with the Siegel Center as the BIPOC artist advocate and artistic advisor. We're talking about Liberation's Radiance, which you can check out now, 5:30 to 7:30 in front of the Siegel Center as a special event, something that, you know, you can see as you pass through the center, as we're not really allowed, still able to gather. There's an online component. You've hinted at these conversations and the further discussion that accompanies this visual presentation. So it's not just about the Siegel Center and Tim's work. We're also bringing in Black Theater Workshop here and their artist mentorship program, which is just a fantastic platform, I think, for young emerging artists. Tell me about the conversations. Who have you been speaking with so far this month?
As far as the reflections, as far yes. as the mentorship program. Okay, so we have three artists lined up. So the way that we saw it was like, okay, so it's a month long event. So the first week is really focused on the lighting installation itself. So, you know, first week was that. And as of the second week, we bring on these artists. So the first artist was Marilyn Chéri. She is an incredible poet, actor, dramaturg. She did two women's shows. She's bilingual, French, English, actually trilingual, because she also speaks Creole. She's wow. from Haitian descent and is very present in her art. And we just had this great conversation that stems from the piece itself. And, you know, we talked about her art, her life as an artist. And then we just dived into kind of, you know, like what we talked about, like coming to America, you know, like how the movie's coming up and things like that. So it's very, it's very fun and cheeky. Sorry?
It's accessible.
Yes, it's super yeah. accessible. And then we have folks on the Zoom. The first part is just like really like me interviewing the artist. And then after that, we have an open Q&A. And yeah, so it's very easy and just fun.
Oh, fantastic. So there'll be one more that we can catch Wednesday, February the 24th, I believe. Who will you be speaking with then?
We'll be talking with a great playwright. Her name is Willow Chiopa. And so we'll be talking with her.
You were appointed in 2020, so in the last calendar year, as in your role as BIPOC artist advocate and artistic advisor with the Siegel Center, Kamana. How do you see your role? I understand it's something that's in development. You're working on, you know, what exactly your I guess goals are, or how you're going to be involved in ongoing productions and work. Where do you see your role evolving as?
I see this role as a bridge, you know, so it's a bridge between how we've been doing things and how we want to do things. So I don't take myself as like, you know, knowing every single thing and knowing how, you know, being the book for best practices, but I have a lot of experience on and off the stage and just being part of the conversations opens up another perspective
right.
and brings us to, you know, solutions that are more inclusive and just more more thought through. Also we also spend a lot of time, you know, having questions that are unanswered, but we're adding questions to, you know, but by adding those questions we're adding possibilities and we're finding ways out of problems, out of situations, you know, how we're gonna reach out to this community, what should we do, so on and so forth. So I feel like since I'm not, you know, I'm from the theater world, but right now I'm not attached to theater particularly. My experience as like a freelance performer and a freelance director is, you know, is really helpful.
Statement from Lisa Rubin, who is the top boss there at the Siegel Center. And she mentioned that it's a time for racial justice. There's a rise in anti-Semitism, but she talks about bringing Black and Jewish communities together and to cooperate, to collaborate, to talk about challenges facing these communities and other communities as well. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I feel like, yeah, like it's about time. That's how I feel. No, for real. It's about time because I'm thinking, like, for instance, you know, the Siegel Center and Black Theater Workshop, two staples of Canadian theater, two staples of theater, especially in Montreal. And, you know, to me, they haven't created the opportunities to come together as often as you think they would, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like representing communities that have been marginalized, you know? So I'm like, well, and also I'm like, you know what I mean? Like I'm talking to Lisa and I'm like, well, what about Black Jews? You know, there are Black Jews. Where are their stories? Where are they, you know? Or, you know, not necessarily just Black Jews, but like, you know, Jewish people from all sorts of community, like Jewish people come from all over the world, you know, and that's what I like about Lisa. She's very open. We have these great conversations and like, you know, they brought Nakuset. Nakuset is an indigenous woman that was, as a child, was part of the 60s scoop in Canada where indigenous children were basically taken away from their families to be adopted into other families. And in her case, Nakuset was adopted by a Jewish family, hence why the Siegel Center was giving that platform. But I think, you know, to me, it might be simplistic to say that, but I don't see it as Jewish history, Indigenous history, Black history. I really see it as this is our Canadian history. This is all our history. So, yeah, I love that those initiatives are taken at the Siegel, and I'm happy to be there experiencing that and pushing that forward.
I think that's so well put. And I now have a vision of you as the kind of the a little bird like on Lisa's shoulders almost. Yeah. Yeah. Pointing things out. And that's so interesting to have an institution like that with such a long legacy being able to open up a space for someone to kind of to nudge and to point and to kind of make those suggestions. It's an interesting job to have for sure. And I hope we can keep talking to you about it as things evolve. So congratulations on your new appointment and as well as the conversations ongoing through this month. One more left to check out before Black History Month comes to an end. Thank you so much for your time, Kamana.
Thank you so much. I was very happy to be here.
That was Kamana Nibarakure, a theater artist, as well as the first BIPOC artist advocate and artistic advisor at the Siegel Center. We spoke last February. The two other voices you heard in this retro look back episode of Upstage included Quincy Armour of Black Theater Workshop, as well as actress and writer Amelia Sargerson, who was presenting one of her works in development at the Centaur earlier this year. Thank you so much for tuning in on this June 24th, 2021 edition of Upstage. A thank you to my guests who took the time to speak with me over the last couple of months. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under the archives. Thank you to Jack and the team at Upstage for helping this show get to air. Thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah DeAg. We'll speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and CKUT.ca. Bonne Saint-Jean, enjoy your day and stay safe.
Nous sommes des millions à parler français, une langue vibrante qui façonne notre culture. La Fondation canadienne pour le dialogue des cultures est fière de présenter la 3e édition de Tout pour la musique, une vitrine des célébrations de la Saint-Jean-Baptiste. Diffusée par UNITV, ce spectacle invite à s'unir et à manifester notre fierté d'être francophone. Ici Jean-François Brault. Le 24 juin à 21h, heure de l'Est, ne manquez pas le spectacle Tout pour la musique en direct sur UNITV. J'y serai avec Vincent Vallière, Radio Radio, Roxane Bruno, Willows et bien d'autres. Visitez le tplm.ca pour plus de détails.
Did you get vaccinated?
Not yet, but I will soon.
And which one are you getting?
I'm getting the dance vaccine.
The dance vaccine? Great idea.
Yeah, rehearsing with the girls is what I miss the most.
Well, it's going to be the soccer vaccine for me. I can't wait to see the gang again.
Each vaccination brings us closer to these moments. Follow the vaccination sequence planned for your area and book an appointment at quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine. A message from the gouvernement du Québec. Vaccination against COVID-19 is ongoing throughout Quebec. The combined effect of two doses ensures better efficacy of the vaccine, reducing the risk of getting and transmitting the virus. You'll also stay protected for a longer period of time. Coming to your appointment for the second dose of the vaccine is a must, whatever else is on your schedule. The second dose of vaccine is essential. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
To the power hitter of FM radio. Keep it tuned to CKUT 90.3 FM.
I think the magnitude of this will probably not sink in or talked about or understood for a while.
CKUT